Hello, and welcome to the News Cycle. I'm your host, Iris Harshaw. It's Monday, December 16th. Last week, a coalition of students, parents, public school districts, and education advocacy groups started a lawsuit against the University of California for their requirement of the SAT and ACT for undergraduate admissions, claiming that the use of the tests in the admissions process is discriminatory. To find out more, I sat down with Michal Kurlander, professor and department chair of the UC Davis School of Education. We discussed her research into college readiness, the problems with standardized tests in college admissions, and where the UC system is headed. Welcome to the News Cycle. Can you first start off by talking about the research that you and your colleagues completed and what the conclusions were?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. As part of my research team, we have looked closely at what are predictors of college success. And in particular, we're looking at different ways to think about admissions and have looked at typical traditionally used components in the application, such as high school GPA and SAT, but have also decided more recently to look at the tests that the state uses in its accountability system. That is the state test that every 11th grade student takes in California, called the Smarter Balance Assessment. And it is aligned to the state standards that were adopted in 2010 in California as part of Common Core college and career readiness standards. Mm-hmm. And so this test is supposed to be aligned. And so my colleagues and I wanted to say, does this test, in fact, do a good job predicting college outcomes?
And what were the conclusions that you reached?
We reached the conclusion. So what we did is we looked at all of California 11th grade students who went on to CSU or UC, our two large public four-year systems, and found that, in fact, consistent with other research, high school GPA is the single best predictor, if you're only going to have one, of how students will fare in college in the first year in terms of their first year grades in college, and that the SAT and Smarter Balance do about equally well. Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between the SAT and ACT than the Smarter Balance?
The two tests are quite different in that the SAT and ACT are shorter tests. They don't take as long. They're high-stakes tests because they're used for admissions. Mm-hmm. The Smarter Balance test is typically untimed, although it's typically done within one day. And it covers, again, the richer set of standards that our high schools are being held accountable to. And so that's on everything from math and English language arts that are integrated. It's computer adaptive tests. Mm-hmm. And so by that, it means that the test is also adaptive to how a student fares and then adjusts accordingly. And there's criterion reference, which is to say how you do on that test is either at one of the four levels that California acknowledges meet standards, exceed standards, or do not meet standards.
In the current conversation, a lot of UC officials, even chancellors of certain UC schools, have talked about considering taking the SAT and ACT off of the requirement status for college admissions. How does your research and your professional opinion apply to that pathway that currently people are looking down?
I think the reason that there are a lot of opponents to the use of the SAT or ACT in college admission largely stem from the fact that we have lots of inequality in how students perform on this test. And so in particular, you see really different differences in test performance by important background characteristics of students, race and income. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of pushback, including the recent lawsuit, to use a test that has what's called a disparate impact on certain groups. It's important to note that these tests, whatever tests we use, are often measuring the whole host of inequality advantages and disadvantages students bring to that test day. And that's everything from quality instruction. Have they been at a quality school up to that point mm-hmm. of that test? Good teaching materials. Access to teaching materials. Have they done any test prep or retaken the test? And so there's concern by opponents to the test use that all of these advantages and disadvantages make the test not appropriate for use because of its disparate impact. Whether the smarter balance is actually highly correlated, our research shows, with the SAT, but it's also distinct in several ways. For one, it's the test that is utilized in schools, and so we want students to learn the material on this test because that is our state standards. It also happens in the school day. Every student takes this test or is supposed to be taking this test. Right. And so our taxpayers have already paid for it, and it's a more achievement-oriented test in that it covers a wider array of curricula. Although, again, it's important to know from our research that it is also that there is a strong relationship between performance on the SAT and on the Smarter Balance.
But the difference between the two would be the fact that people can pay for a lot of test prep for the SAT and the ACT, or they can take it multiple times to improve their score, but they can't do that with Smarter Balance.
That's right. Not currently, right? So you always have to be careful with these kinds of research conclusions that we don't know what would happen if suddenly the state uses it. We'd still like to believe that it's an important test to teach to, so we're less worried about the testing in terms of it at driving instruction, for example, and what happens in schools. But of course, we'll now add an important stake to this test for individuals, and so any number of kind of push on sort of who has access to materials if it's not done well in school would still apply in this case. But no, you wouldn't, you know, the question of whether or not you could retake the test remains to be seen because we haven't used the test in mm-hmm. this way. My recommendations to the state have been that they consider this as one factor in a period where they at least compare it to the use of the SAT. So my recommendation has been that the state's university system consider requiring it as one optional way to consider another objective way to think about academic ability, including high school GPA, including possibly the SAT or ACT or class rank. There are a number of things that the university could do.
So a lot of people have been talking about taking away the SAT and ACT, and for a lot of the reasons that you've already talked about. But you believe that it's possible that if it was taken away and the Smarter Balance is given the same weight currently that the SAT and ACT has, that there would be an industry that might emerge to how to score better on the Smarter Balance test.
I think it's possible. I think we don't know is the real answer. Mm-hmm. I think there's the quality of the, we want to make sure that the test we use, my support of the Smarter Balance, putting aside the SAT, is because, again, it's already taken. I'd like for there to be a stake for students to feel invested in it. Mm-hmm. And it's already paid for. And so a student may not feel like they do as well on the SAT, but if they do well on the material that is actually taught in their school and can perform well on that, then I believe that that should be used in information about how they would succeed in our state's premier university. And so I think we're essentially throwing away important information that we as a state have said matter about what students learn in our high schools today. And so the stakes are there for schools because it's part of the school accountability system. And I believe it's important to use that individual information about how a student performs on these tests for purposes of admission. And so we also know there's a lot of pressure on students to do well on these tests. And so why not offer another opportunity to perform?
Within the UC system, what is our timeline like looking forward on this subject?
So the UC created a task force to look at this question. They've been meeting. I've met with them as well. And they will make recommendations that should come out in the beginning of the new year. Mm-hmm. And then that goes to a faculty senate committee and to the regents for any kind of formal policy decision.
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure.
While walking through the halls of Davis High School, you come across few students who associate positive feelings with the SAT. Dahlia Krause has the story.
As a Davis High student, what words do you associate with the SAT?
Stressful.
Important.
Boring.
Scam. Stressful.
Difficult.
Overhyped.
Weird.
Stressful.
Long. Nerve-wracking.
Stressful. I don't know what to say.
Synonyms for hard.
Synonyms of hard are difficult and sensitive.
Difficult.
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 Evidently, most students find the SAT difficult and stressful. But variety pops up in student opinions when it comes to whether the UC system should continue the SAT or eliminate it. Take sophomore Gavin Lynch, for instance.
I feel like there's definitely a lot of pros and cons. Like, I can see both sides of the argument.
One reason Lynch thinks the SAT should continue is because it serves as a tool in the application process to uniformly compare students from across the United States.
I can see why you might want to have it to compare, because some schools don't have the same facilities or opportunities.
But sophomore Eitan Rosenheim believes the SAT is an inaccurate measure of intelligence, so colleges should eliminate it.
The SAT is basically a test that tells you how smart you are. I feel like that's kind of stupid, because you really can't determine how smart a person is without knowing them and working with them. They just rely on a test, but if you're not good at taking tests, or you mess up on the test, then you're not going to be able to get into certain colleges.
Senior Kylie Seward agrees that the test is flawed.
So much of the SAT isn't testing what you know, it's testing how to take that specific kind of test.
Last year, Seward took SAT prep classes, another controversial part of the debate. Both her mom and dad went to four-year colleges, and as parents, they helped Seward through the SAT process and paid for resources.
Yeah, I definitely feel fortunate to be able to attend the classes. It's a big privilege.
Seward's family spent a total of $800 for the weekly three-month SAT class. As a nervous test taker, Seward found these classes beneficial. She learned test-taking strategies and completed practice assignments.
More than anything, it helped me because it forced me to study.
After dedication and hard work, Seward earned a 1480 on the SAT. Seward says she feels fortunate for her opportunities, but she sees how the SAT creates disparities.
It does seem to put a disadvantage to lower income students because, yeah, if I had not been able to pay for this class, it probably would have changed my score and it would have affected things.
Compared to Seward, junior Dara Agunduin finds herself in a different situation. Agunduin's parents were both born in Nigeria. They went through the Nigerian schooling system, making them unfamiliar with the American SAT process.
Me being a first-generation American, it's kind of hard to know the specific resources and what you're supposed to do to prep for an SAT if you had no one really to show you the way.
Agunduin also believes the SAT puts lower-income families at a disadvantage.
I feel like if you have more resources and if you're open to, if you have more money, basically, you can get more things. You get tutors, you can get specific books. And some families just don't have access to, that money. So I just feel like the richer you are, the more, opportunity you have to do better on the test.
According to DHS faculty, the Career Center and Counseling Department offer many free SAT resources. For BlueDevilHub.com, this is Dahlia Krause.
The news cycle is produced by the Blue Devil Hub in collaboration with the Davis Enterprise. Iris Harshaw is the producer. Dahlia Krause is the assistant producer. And Daniel Ruiz Jimenez is the studio recording engineer. Thank you for listening. See you next week, Davis.